So the Perfection of Wisdom text formed the basis of the sort of primary philosophical school of the Mahayana, which again very strongly influenced the Tantra, which is the Majjhimika school. Majjhimika literally means the school of the middle way. So the Majjhimika school is traditionally founded by Nagarjuna in the 2nd century of the Common Era. And Nagarjuna is usually depicted as sailing on a lake with a couple of Naga princesses emerging from the depths, bringing him the perfection of wisdom. Yeah? So you get these Nagas are sort of dragon beings, and they live in the depths, or at least in this. They play different roles in different parts of Buddhist tradition. But they are, it's the way what they're doing is they're bringing absolute truth up from the very depths of the psyche to him, from the, you know, the depths of consciousness. Naga babes with books. So it's a very familiar point that the Prajnaparamita texts are making. Yeah, I'm sure, however short a time you've been coming along here, you're familiar with this point, that the Dharma is a raft, yeah, designed to carry us across the ocean of samsara to the farther shore of nirvana. Please don't take that metaphor too literally. Yeah? The Dharma is a means to an end. Yeah? It's a finger pointing at the moon. Yeah? So this symbolism of the moon as the full moon is a symbol of enlightenment. Don't mistake the finger for the moon. So it's not important if, at the end of this evening, you don't remember any of this history of Buddhism lesson. Yeah? I don't care. It doesn't matter whether you remember anything about the evolution of the Prajnaparamita texts. It is important that you don't think that the Prajnaparamita texts mean that we can ignore all Buddhist teachings because they're not true. Yeah? From our perspective, as it were, from the perspective of the unenlightened mind, Buddhist teachings need to be understood. You know, it's true that concepts can't take us all the way to enlightenment, but they can take us an awful lot further than most of us have got. Yeah? They are, you know, the Dharma is a very profound set of teachings, and it points beyond itself. But you've got to get to that point. You've got to get to that sort of. You've got to get to the edge of the concepts and leap into the void, as it were, rather than just bin all the concepts too early on. Yeah? There's a tendency we can have to just sort of say, "Well, okay." In a way, that's why I want to look at. That's the why I want to take this approach to the Heart Sutra. I want us to go through the Heart Sutra and know what all of these teachings are before we negate them. Because in a way, the risk is that you negate them before you know what it is that you're taking. You know, you haven't got around to taking it too literally. You don't really understand it. We don't understand it. I don't. I certainly don't understand most of the categories in here. If we don't use the raft to its full extent, as it were, the raft of the Dharma, well, we're going to be left in the middle of that ocean, aren't we? We're just going to be adrift, clutching at flotsam and jetsam, without any way of getting to the other shore. So we really have to make use of the Buddhist teachings as much as we possibly can. So let's take a little look. Might want to get your sheet out. I'm just going to very briefly, on this particular occasion, go through the text and just have a little look at the structure of it and draw out some of the themes that we can, which I think will be fruitful for us to look at over the coming weeks. Next week, well, which starts? Let's start at the beginning. Om homage to her, the glorious lady, noble Prajnaparamita. So next week we're going to meet the goddess, yeah? We're going to meet the incarnation, Prajnaparamita, who is the embodiment, the sort of perfect wisdom. Perfect wisdom made, not literally flesh, but certainly made light, as it were, made being, shall we say. So we'll meet the goddess next week. Excuse me. Then the advantage of the version of the text we've been looking at tonight is it makes rather clearer the structure than the version you might be more familiar with from the puja. So what's going on here is it's not quite a conversation actually. It's Avalokiteshvara, who's the Bodhisattva of compassion, giving a bit of a lecture to Sariputra. Yeah? So it's going to be worth a while looking at Avalokiteshvara, getting to know him a bit better, and perhaps exploring why it is him, why is the Bodhisattva of compassion giving a teaching on perfect wisdom? Because in a way you'd expect the Bodhisattva of wisdom, wouldn't you, to be doing that? And the person he's talking to is Shariputra. So Shariputra is one of the Buddha's key disciples. And Shariputra was renowned for his wisdom. Yeah? So we'll spend an evening having a look at Shariputra. Well, you can't really look at Shariputra without looking at his best mate Moggallana either. So we'll probably look at both of them, Maha Moggallana. Shariputra was renowned for his wisdom. Moggallana was renowned for his psychic powers. And Shariputra is attributed with being the person who created the Abhidharma. Yeah. What is the Abhidharma? I hear you. I hear your minds grinding, or at least some of your minds saying, oh no, not more stuff, please, no more. No more facts, please. So, let's have a look at what the Abhidharma is one week. Briefly, it's the way in which Buddhism looks at the world, and particularly our experience, particularly our mental experience, mental and emotional experience, and subdivides it into very subtle categories, very subtle types of experience. Yeah. So, in a way, one of the things that's going on in this is Avalokiteshvara saying, these categories that you've divided your experience into, they're all very good, but they're not literally, it's not literally like that. Yeah. So we'll have a look at the Abhidharma. Not in very great detail. I'm not a great practitioner of the Abhidharma. Maybe we can wheel in somebody who's a bit more of an Abhidharmika than I am. So the skandhas, these heaps. The skandhas are in a way the start of the Abhidharma. They're a way of dividing up the psychophysical organism into its structure and its processes of cognition. Yeah, the way in which we understand and process our experience. So the first chunk of the sutra is looking at what the skandhas are and then saying that the skandhas aren't literally the case. So if we're going to do that, then it's going to really benefit us to have at least some understanding of what the skandhas are. And I have to say, it took me a long time to get my head around the skandhas. I think it took me a good 10 years to have the faintest idea what the skandhas were on about. And that my take on them isn't entirely canonical, shall we say. It then goes into all phenomena are characterized by emptiness. They're not arisen, not ceased, not stained, not stainless, not deficient, not complete. So these are categories of dharmas within the Abhidharma. Yeah, so this is dharma with a small d, which is glossed here as phenomena. So again, that'll become a bit clearer when we look at the Abhidharma. We then go into looking at the nature of sense experience. So Buddhism looks at how our sense experience is formed by the interaction of an object with a sense organ and a consciousness related to that sense. Yeah. So I think it would be useful for us to spend a bit of time looking at that. Those of you who've heard Kulananda talk in recent years, he'll have touched on that whole business about when a tree falls in a forest, does it make a sound? We'll use that stuff, I think, that evening. So we'll look at the nature of our sensory experience. Is one thing we can usefully look at. It then moves on to the Nirvana chain, doesn't it? Doesn't it? Yes, Nyanagarbha, doesn't it? So it negates the Nirvana chain, both in terms of its traditional sort of independence upon ignorance arises, yada yada, up until old age and death. But also one of the ways we don't talk about it much, the way in which early Buddhism talks about you sort of unravel the Nirvana chain by working backwards through it. Yeah, you can work backwards to unravel this list of links, that you get around the outside of the Wheel of Life, these 12 links. So we're going to have to try and get our heads around the 12 links, aren't we? As well as unpacking those. So then we get the Four Noble Truths, don't we? No suffering, no cause, no cessation, no path. So we're going to have to look at the Four Noble Truths. No non-dual awareness, jnana. No attainment, no non-attainment. Don't know where those categories come from, but I'll do some homework. I've got quite a few weeks before I have to know those, don't I? So I'll check out where they come from. I don't know off the top of my head. We better find out what these mind obscurations are, haven't we? The bodhisattvas don't have. We better find out what these four confused views are. When we better look a bit at mantras and the mantrayana, the power of mantras. We could look at the Buddhas of the Three Times as well, couldn't we? We could just go on for the rest of our lives studying this sutra, couldn't we? And then when we've done all that, we can begin to look at why they're not absolutely the case. We can look at, well, why is it that form is no other than emptiness? What is the nature of shunyata? What are the shunyata teachings about? What is emptiness? Or what is it empty of? And that is going to take some homework on my part. Fortunately, Subhuti gave a whole bunch of talks about that a couple of years ago, so I'll work on that. So we've got a huge amount to be unpacking over the sort of through to the summer. Some of it I'm looking forward to, some of it I'm a bit intimidated by. But that's as much as I've got to say for now. Does anybody have any observations or questions that come out of any of that? That aren't obviously going to be dealt with when we come during another week. Of course, I can always say, "Oh yes, we'll cover that in weeks to come." When I don't know the answer, can I?
I noticed that the mantras are actually still.